and afternoon. And that case is Appeal 132699, and it's Etta Scott versus Westlake Services. And good morning, Mr. Lemberg.
Good morning, Your Honor. And may it please the court. I represent...
Good afternoon. What is wrong with you?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I represent Etta Scott, who, by the way, doesn't owe Westlake Financial a penny. Her name was listed by a woman named Wanda as a reference on an application for a car loan. And when Wanda became delinquent, Westlake Financial found it appropriate to use its computer robo-dialer to call not Wanda, mind you, but Etta Scott, for reasons that remain unclear.
Can you explain what the controversy is about labeling some calls auto-dialed calls and other manual calls? I mean, can you explain why and how you think businesses are manipulating calls to make them fall outside of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act?
I live this stuff, Your Honor, and I can explain to you what the issue is. There is something called a dialer, a computer dialer, pure dialer. They download numbers, the dialer dialers. The dialer dials. That's a dialer, no question. There's something called a predictive dialer, a dialer that is able to predict based on past experience when the call recipient may answer the phone, and once the phone is answered, it then predicts who is going to receive, which of its thousands of representatives will then receive the call.
You're frightening me. Go ahead.
So that's a predictive dialer. FCC has said both of those two categories are dialers. Now, and then there is this vast world of in-betweenness, where there is now, for instance, a petition for clarification before the FCC, where the question is, well, if you feed a bunch of numbers, thousands of numbers into the computer, and you have 1,000 representatives, and on their machine, the numbers pop up, and the representative has to, all they have to do, and all they must do, incidentally, is click a button, this human intervention. Is that a dialer? And then the computer dials. Is that a dialer, or is that more akin to a dialing function on a rotary phone, for instance? So the defendants, in virtually every case I have, will say, we do not use a dialer as it is defined by the FCC. We use something else. Our dialer is not a dialer because the liability is so huge. And we, of course, say, well, sure it is. Your own website says you have a dialer. You have a predictive dialer. Well, we don't use our predictive dialer as a predictive dialer. We use it with human intervention. Therefore, it's not a dialer. That's what this litigation is normally about. The defendant could have, I submit to the panel, the defendant could have mooted this case. The defendant could have said what the lawyer said in Damasco, that I'm sure Your Honors are familiar with. They could have said, look, we'll pay you for all the calls. End of story, morning glory. Here's a list. We'll pay $1,500 plus costs. Case over. They didn't do it in this case. The Damasco case assumed that the offer, and then the offer there, was to pay for all calls received by the plaintiff. The offer here wasn't that. The offer here was to pay for all auto-dialed calls made to plaintiff, of which the defendant identified 6 at the time of the district court's decision, and now that number has been reduced by half. It is now 3. So the question is, did they offer, in Judge Easterbrook's words in Gates 1, to pay the plaintiff's entire demand? The answer is no. They didn't. They didn't even come close.
So this case isn't over then?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor.
Well, what are we doing? Is this an interim appeal, or is it mooted and starting something else down below? It seems to me there's a lot yet to be decided in this case.
Well, Your Honor, if I don't want to be overly optimistic, but if it gets remanded, we'll determine the full scope of the relief Ms. Scott is entitled to. It may be that the case will continue as a class action. It may be that it will survive as an individual case.
But there isn't a decision about how much is or isn't owed, is there?
Not yet, because there's a conflict. The district judge was faced with the subpoenaed phone records. We subpoenaed phone records from Ms. Scott's telephone company. The phone records said 65 calls she got. Now, some of those calls were obvious duplicates. There were calls made at the same time. But some of those calls were, 19 calls in 20 minutes.
Well, this three before us, the district...
42 minutes.
The district judge has ordered more discovery, right?
The district judge ordered limited discovery, Your Honor, to determine the number of calls made to plaintiff. We did two things. I wrote a letter to the defendant asking for the record of all the calls made to plaintiff, and then a record of the six auto dial calls referenced in their submissions to the district court, and we subpoenaed the phone records. We got nothing from the defendant, as in not one piece of paper, and then we submitted what we thought was the next reasonable thing, a motion to finalize the judgment and make it cashable, so to speak, and something on the order of $65,000. The defendant opposed that motion for two reasons, saying, look, our records...
Does that include attorney's fees?
No, Your Honor. Attorney's fees are not at issue in TCPA cases.
No. I just... Oh, okay. What do you mean they're not at issue?
It's not a fee-shifting statute. Should be.
Unusual in that regard.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of money involved.
I was accused of being a greedy plaintiff's lawyer because I sue on all these fee-shifting statutes, including the TCPA, but in that instance they were wrong. The TCPA is not one of those statutes.
Mr. Lemberg, can I just ask you, is there any particular reason why you didn't move to certify a class in this case at the same time you filed your complaint?
To be frank, Your Honor, I litigate in federal courts all over the country. This was my introduction to Seventh Circuit, particular way of doing things.
Some members of the Supreme Court have told us at least not to try this at home, right, in the Genesis dissent? So,
yes.
Would you agree that, however that circuit split might be resolved ultimately, I understand your position to be that this settlement offer was not really comparable to what happened in Genesis. That is, it did not meet all of your client's demands.
That is correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And apparently, as Judge Mannion mentioned, there's an awful lot that seems yet to be decided in this so-called moot mm-hmm. case.
I think Judge Mannion is absolutely correct. It seems to me that I don't think Damasco is relevant here because in Damasco it was assumed that the offer was a full offer. And then there's a question of whether a full offer satisfies and why it does or why it doesn't. And Judge Rovner said, well, we've held it does and it moves the case and see you later. But previous to that, Judge Easterbrook said, well, what if it doesn't? What if there is money... They're not offering everything. Well, then clearly there's something yet to be decided. Let's try the case and figure out who is owed what and how many calls they made and what technologies they used and what the penalty for that should be. Unless the
hold on to your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartzell, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, David Hartzell, McGuire Woods, on behalf of the defendant appellee, Westlake Services.
Can you explain to me the difference? Does a live human sit and dial all 10 digits of her telephone number 19 times over the course of 42 minutes?
Your Honor, let me try to explain it. It's actually quite simple for purposes of this case. There are two kinds of calls that are at issue. There are what we call manually dialed calls, right, which is how you and I make phone calls. We press the buttons on the phone, and we wait for somebody to answer. In a large-scale calling environment, be it a bank, an airline, a telecommunications company, they use what are called automated dialers. And generally how that works is a list of phone numbers will be pre-programmed into the computer. It's part of a calling campaign. We're going to call all of our customers who spent more than $500 on our products last year and offer them some promotional thing. So there'll be a defined calling campaign. So you load all those numbers into the computer, and the computer starts calling those numbers. Bam, 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 bam. And when you pick up the phone, sometimes you've experienced this. You pick up the phone and you say, hello, hello, and there'll be a little delay, 1, 2, 3 seconds, and then somebody will pick up the phone. Some representative will pick up and say, hey, I'm calling about such and such. That's an automated dialer. And so the computer is making those calls, and the computer can actually recognize the difference between a live human being picking up the phone and an answering machine. And when it gets a live human being, it transfers it to a representative. So it's really just a matter, it's just a mechanism to facilitate a large volume of calls and make sure you're actually getting through to people who are there to take the call. The Telephone Consumer Protection Act does not govern manually dialed calls. It only governs automated calls, or what the plaintiff's bar likes to call and the press likes to call robocalls. They're automated calls. That's the only thing that's governed by the TCPA. I can sit here all day long and manually dial people, and there's no violation. In this case, the claim was brought under the TCPA for for automated calls. The only issue that's presented here, and by the just to back up for a second, this case was on file for over 2 months. There was an amended complaint on file before we made our offer. And this case is just on all fours with Damasco. The only way it can't be on all fours is if you misconstrue the nature of the offer that was made. The issue presented here is whether the defendant's offer was an offer of complete relief. There's just no doubt that it was. We offered $1,500 for each and every automated call. Of course we did.
But that assumes the merits, right?
No, it does not. No, it does not. We didn't offer to pay for manual calls because those calls aren't actionable and those calls weren't at issue in the complaint. We offered to pay for each and every automated call that was made to the plaintiff's cell phone, which is exactly what she requested in her prayer for relief.
How many were those?
When I made the offer, we offered each and every. We indicated that at that time we believed there were six. But it didn't matter. What I told Judge Castillo and what I've told this court is it doesn't matter whether there are six or 600. We offer to pay for each and every one. That is the exact same offer that was made in Damascus.
I really lost you. How many did you offer to pay for?
Each and every one.
Which is how many?
There is a dispute about that.
Right. So I'm trying to figure out what you think it is.
We submitted an affidavit and phone record evidence before Judge Castillo that indicates that we've now confirmed that there were 3 automated calls and about 30 manually dialed calls.
So for instance, there was someone manually dialing 19 times over a course of 42 minutes.
Your Honor, I think you're probably referring to that Sprint phone record. Yeah, which frankly I find incomprehensible because of there's no testimony to support it. There's no explanation of it. It contains duplicates. It contains calls that appear to start while other calls are still pending. And, in fact, this is all in front of Judge Castillo right now. There was actually a key that should have come with that phone record.
What are you doing here if you're still in front of Judge Castillo?
Because all he is deciding, well, I'm here because he filed an appeal.
Because a dismissal was entered, right?
There was a dismissal. There was a judgment entered in favor of the plaintiff. And now the district court is simply going to enforce the terms of its judgment. There is an injunction that is going to enter against my client, and there is a judgment for $1,500 for each automated call. And all
How
the district
is that
court,
even final?
Because it's almost borders on a ministerial task to determine how many calls.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Well, can I quote something from the plaintiff's brief? He says.
I prefer you quote something from the law.
Well, I'll do both. I could stand up and stop with Damasco. The fact that there was a dispute, it didn't stop the parties. It didn't stop the district court or this court from finding mootness in Damasco when there was the exact same dispute. Damasco, there was a dispute about the number of text messages. That didn't stop the district court from saying the case was moot. It didn't stop this court from saying the case was moot. That was this court's opinion. That was your opinion, Judge Robner.
Well, let's suppose we got away from a consumer protection statute. Let's say we were dealing with a personal injury statute. And the defendant says, we're liable and we agree to pay reasonable damages. Is that sufficient to moot a case?
It depends on whether the reasonable damages can be quantified with some certainty. For instance, if the reasonable damages in that case were you get $50,000 for a broken leg, you get $100,000 for a poked out eye. Then here we've got a statute
so
that says.
I take it you would agree that an offer of reasonable damages is not sufficient to moot a case if you still have to try what's reasonable.
I would agree that it wouldn't be here. Had my offer been for reasonable damages here, it would not have been sufficient. But I offered to pay exactly what the statute allows.
Well,
$1,500.
You say we agree to pay $1,500 for every violation of the law. Right? That's essentially what your offer is, right?
Every violative automated call, yes.
Yes. Without any agreement as to how many or which calls are covered by that. This isn't even a judgment for money damages.
It's not even a settlement. A full settlement offer.
It's different than Damasco.
I'm going back and reading it again.
In Damasco, I
want to just say that.
Damasco said every call.
That's what my offer said, Judge.
No, every call that you think she deserves.
No, it did not say that. It did not say that. It said each and every call. And I, on the record, in front of the district court and in front of this court, is saying it doesn't matter. If Judge Castillo comes down and says there were 600 calls, I'm paying for 600 calls. All right? But the evidence that is in front of him right now is
offers
the evidence.
Offers to pay plaintiff the sum of $1,500 for each and every dialer-generated telephone call made to plaintiff. I'm looking at Appendix 41.
And that's
correct.
The issue.
Because the dialer-generated calls are the only ones that are actionable. Okay. Well, this is Damasco on all fours. In Damasco involved text messages. There were multiple text messages sent to the plaintiff in Damasco. There was a dispute in Damasco over the defendant made the offer, I will pay for each and every text message.
Yes. A text message is a text message. There aren't human-generated. There aren't they're all human-generated. There isn't, you know, robo-generated text messages. It's a very different issue.
Actually, there are robo-generated text messages, but the point is there was still a dispute. You still had to figure out in Damasco. They still had to figure out how many text messages were sent to apply the calculation. $1,500 times text message.
I'm not even going to pretend. I am so mixed up at this point because I just don't understand why you're all here over here. I know he thought that he could maintain jurisdiction over a settlement agreement, but this is a settlement offer that has not been accepted. There's no contract. There's no agreement. There's no consent. Seems to me you're just worlds apart here.
It's not an issue of if I may, Your Honor.
Sure.
It's not an issue of contract law. It's not an issue of offer and acceptance. It's an issue of jurisdiction. It's an issue of Article III standing. The minute I made this offer, the case was over. because I offered the plaintiff everything she could possibly get. All we had to do was apply a calculation here to figure out what the damages were.
There's a difference. There's what takes to moot a case under this circuit's jurisprudence, as to which there is considerable controversy, but given this circuit's jurisprudence, what it takes is an offer that gives the plaintiff everything she asks for, not everything she's entitled to. Everything she asks for.
I did. If you look at the prayer for relief in the complaint, in the amended complaint, statutory damages of $500 up to $1,500 for each and every call in violation of the TCPA. An injunction. I offered both of those things. There is absolutely nothing else she could get. They say in their brief, they say, oh, my God, we got to have experts. We got to take depositions. We got to do written discovery. We got to do examination of calling systems. Judge Castillo allowed them to do discovery. What did they do? No experts, no depositions, didn't issue any discovery. They sent a third-party subpoena to her own phone carrier to get a call log, which is confusing on its face, with no support to explain what it is or how it should be interpreted. But the fact is, it's now in front of Judge Castillo, and he's going to decide. And it's really just a ministerial matter of taking that number and applying it to $1,500. There's nothing else that would proceed in this case.
So what is there left for us to do right now?
Affirm and allow the court to enforce its judgment order.
Is there a way to appeal from that?
Anything like this in my life.
I suppose there might. I mean, I can imagine there could always be circumstances in which when a court retains jurisdiction to enforce some aspect
if
of its judgment.
If you don't like the result, then you appeal.
Pardon me?
If you don't like the result, then you can appeal it.
Well, actually, the worst result for me is $65,000, and I can assure you I'm not going to appeal if that's what happens, because my client wants finality. That was the whole point here. But I suppose there could be instances where... Pardon me?
The worst result for you is a remand and a class certification, right?
Well, we'll be back... we'll be back doing, I guess, all this discovery that he says he needs to do that he didn't feel that he needed to do in order to move for judgment in front of the court. I mean, really, what is the point? What is the point of going back to do discovery that he's already had the opportunity to do, and he's done sufficient discovery by his own measure to present to the district court and ask for judgment of $67,000? What would we be doing back in the district court?
I'm going to ask him. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a mess. Come on up. I'm asking you.
This is weird.
I'm asking you.
I agree that this is weird. I have no quibble with that. And the question I assume from Your Honor is, well, what do you do here? I think you send it back. You remand it. Reverse the district court determination that it has no jurisdiction over the case because it's moot, and direct that the case proceed like any other case that isn't moot, where a party makes an offer to settle that doesn't moot a case. People do it all the time. This was just such an offer. It didn't moot a case. It assumed that its legal position is sound, and asked that its case be dismissed because it tendered everything it admitted was due. And that is sort of a merits determination. It's putting the cart before the horse. It's inappropriate. The case needs to go back. We need to start fresh. And then we're not doing limited discovery to determine the number of calls placed to Scott by defendant. We're doing discovery under the federal rules to determine what Scott and the class of people that Scott represents are going to be entitled to under the law.
So it will be a class action.
I'm sorry?
So it will be a class action.
Your Honor,
you just mentioned
I
class,
can't promise you, and sure. I'll be frank with you, Ms. Scott, as it stands, is entitled to receive herself $65,000. I can't ask her to waive that and represent the class in exchange for... but that does not mean that there will not be a period in which I will ask the district court to wait for us to find a replacement plaintiff who may wish to proceed with the case.
So are you maintaining that all you were permitted to do was limited discovery?
Limited discovery. That's what the judge ordered. And in my mind, if it's limited, well, gee whiz, produce the call records. I'll subpoena the phone records. They asked for a deposition of the plaintiff. I said, well, under what authority is a judgment debtor deposing the judgment creditor to determine the amount of money the judgment creditor owes the judgment debtor? I couldn't
That's
find anything in the federal rules. And there were a couple of other issues.
I think that we're going to call it a day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll take the case under advisement. We'll do our best. And you all go home. This court is in recess until, tomorrow morning.